This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Hello and welcome to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. Finland's Prime Minister Sanna Marin, currently the world's youngest sitting Prime Minister at 36, recently made headlines after videos emerged of her dancing at two separate private events, which led to some people questioning, you know, her judgment and her capacity as a Prime Minister. Now, if you really look at the videos, you read the reports, they're simply videos showing a young woman enjoying herself, enjoying some time off work, nothing illegal was actually shown in the videos. And of course, you know, if you really read the reports, the social media response, the criticism that she received seems to pale in response to the support that she received as well. But it still begs the question, right? Why was this grabbing headlines, you know, the fact that she was required to justify that she has a social life despite being the Prime Minister of a country? Do we hold young female leaders to different standards compared to male leaders? And that includes here in Malaysia as well. So to explore this both from a gender and organisational perspective, joining me on the show today is Amelia Sharif, Managing Partner of Speak Up Malaysia. Thanks so much for joining me today, Amelia.
Thanks for having me, Sue Ann.
Now, you know, what did you make of the fact that these videos, which simply, like I mentioned, showed a young woman enjoying herself and having some fun time with friends, you know, the fact that this made news, what did you make of it?
I think my first thought was the world is so very not ready for female leaders. I think when, like you mentioned, right, when you're looking at the videos, there's nothing wrong there. Not just there's nothing illegal, there's nothing unethical there. Mm-hmm. You know, like she was just there with her friends having fun in a private party. And somehow it becomes a question of scrutiny and whether or not her judgment is something that the nation or the Finland can trust, right? And if you look at the criticism thrown at her as well, mm-hmm. it moves and it changes the nature of this criticism. At first, it was like, oh, but you're a prime minister. How can you party? And then everyone was like, oh, what's wrong with that? And then the criticism changed to, no. It's not that we're challenging her right to party. It's whether or not she is behaving in a way that is inappropriate. And then people responded and say, why is it inappropriate for a woman to, you know, have a drink and have fun with her friends? And then the criticism moved to become, no, this is not about gender. This is about whether or not as a prime minister, we can trust her judgment. Like, yeah, she can drink. Yeah, she can dance. Suddenly those things are not the problem anymore. Now the problem is, why would she allow herself to be recorded? Mm-hmm. And why would she allow herself to behave in that way in the presence of people that she may not, you know, necessarily trust? So if you look at the nature of criticism, you can see that people are just trying to throw something at her, seeing what would stick. So it begs the question, what exactly is the problem here? So I think that people don't see women as natural leaders. Mm-hmm. So once they get to this position of becoming a leader, people hold them to abhorrently, extremely irrational and unreasonable standards. And because of that, the question is like, oh, you are already in the position of power. How dare you become unapologetically you? You know, how can you behave in a way that you want? You should behave in a way that shows your gratitude towards everyone else that puts you in this position. So I think this is where I think a lot of these criticisms are coming from. Obviously, it comes from a place of deep rooted misogyny. And obviously what we're seeing is also the classic ageist and sexism combo, right? And I think because of that, it becomes so much harder to have this conversation because you don't know mm-hmm. what exactly is the problem with her dancing and having a drink and having fun with her friends.
Mm. And like you mentioned, nothing illegal was shown in the video, and yet people wanted her to take a drug test to prove that she wasn't doing anything illegal. And she agreed to that as well, right? But she was very clear on that, you know, there was nothing wrong that was done. In fact, this were private videos that were leaked to the media, and that is a separate problem that actually wasn't really investigated at all. To play the devil's advocate, Amelia, some would say that, you know, she's put herself herself in a very, very public role. So she's in a position that is very much, you know, under the public eye. So I guess to what extent is it justified for people to scrutinize what she does, especially in her private life, considering her position as someone who is, you know, at the very top of leadership in a country?
Yeah. I think scrutiny for people who are especially public officials in the highest, you know, echelons of power in any country should be given scrutiny. And this scrutiny can extend to their private life because, you know, a lot of the things in their private life could also be something that is illegal. For example, your spending, are you paying taxes and things like that, right? So, so my view is this. It is definitely okay to scrutinize public figures, but that doesn't mean your scrutiny should go unscrutinized as well. Just because you can scrutinize doesn't mean you can say anything you want. So you can scrutinize, but the way you scrutinize them, you have to look at what is the basis of their scrutiny. It, like what I said earlier, right? What is the chief complaint here? What exactly is she doing wrong? Mm-hmm. So if you're not able to identify exactly what is the wrongdoing here, then it reeks of prejudice, it reeks of discrimination because the complaint in itself or the problem in itself is not substantiated. It is baseless. It is not something that you can actually attach any meat to it. So for me, there is a balance that you need to strike. Yes, public officials should be scrutinized, and this can extend to their private and personal life. But of course, that has to be done in a way that is objective, in a way that is non-sexist, non-ageist, in a way that is very fair to the person as well.
And I'm thinking, I guess whatever that you're scrutinizing, that should be something that has an impact to the people that individual is responsible for, right? Like, is there a public interest impact in terms of whatever it is that you are pointing fingers at?
Yeah, I guess. But the thing is, I think people have been very creative in arguing what this public interest is. So if you look at some analytical pieces, there have already been arguments being made as to whether or not this is against certain values or morality that you want to uphold as a nation, right? So I think when it comes to public interest, it is always something you can argue, which is, again, for me, at the end of the day, you always have to look at, I think what you said in the beginning is accurate. It's what is the impact? How does this negatively impact her position and her ability to do her work? Because yes, she did take her drug test. She paid it out of her own pocket, and she made the results public, and that is something that I think she needs to do to address certain public concerns as to whether or not she could have return to her position had there been, a need to make certain calls, in that very moment. So those has been answered. So what else is left?
But at the same time, we have seen immense support for the Prime Minister, right? Just to talk about this a bit more. I mean, we've seen women, I've seen videos of women posting them dancing as well to show that, this is perfectly normal behaviour for women at any age, really, especially, young women. And people pointing out that some of the criticisms did smack of misogyny. What does this support tell us about how, a lot of people are responding to issues like these days?
I think it's very heartening to see that a lot of women in her country are showing very, very public support. And not just that, you also see public officials from other countries, making statements, supporting her, saying that this is very, very much acceptable, right? I also saw a tweet from an Australian politician saying that if the biggest problem your prime minister is causing is that she's dancing with a drink in hand, you are a very lucky country. And honestly, as a Malaysian, I can relate to that. So I do think that it's great that there is, this support that's been given. But at the same time, I also think it's time we unpack, why do we expect women to behave a certain way, and especially when they are in the position of power. And I was thinking about this, because you know, when we were young, we were always told that, you know, boys will be boys, but girls are expected to be perfect, get all A's, smile pretty, close your legs when you're sitting down and stuff like that. So when we grow older, men are given a lot more room to make mistakes, to behave in a way that is a bit more unsavory because, well, boys will be boys, therefore men will be men. But because these standards of perfection that we impose on girls since a young age, so when they grow up, and especially when they assume this kind of position, we expect them to be perfect. There is no room for women, and especially women in the position of power, to make mistakes, because if she makes one mistake, then she is not worthy of the position that she is in. We are not just more harsh on women in power, we are also less forgiving to women in a position of power. And if you go back in time and think about why do we think that way, right? And I think it goes back to this very misogynistic idea that respectful women behave a certain way. So if you want to be a woman in power, you have to behave in a very, like, what I think misogynistic people would describe like classy behavior. So that means you always have to hold yourself in a certain standard. When you sit, you put your legs in a certain way, you hold your spoon a certain way, you don't slurp your soup, you know. So these are the kind of things that we describe as what respectful women should behave like. And now that we're moving to this world of modernization, and when women are challenging the norm and challenging the stereotypes in which they are supposed to behave, obviously, this remnants, I mean, not even remnants, sometimes all our misogynistic understanding of women, their behavior and what's expected, you know, come into play as well. I mean, it's not just about their behavior. It is about their hair color. It is about the dress that they're wearing. Is it too tight? And if you remember, she was also under public backlash back then because she did a photo shoot for a magazine and they were questioning what she was wearing for that photo shoot as well. Mm-hmm. So I think that we live in a world that carry very, very misogynistic values, understanding about who is a respectful woman and which women deserve respect. And that's where the problem lies.
We place different leadership qualities to women and men, right? So hold on to that thought for a bit, Amelia, and we'll continue our discussion after a quick break. I'm speaking today to Amelia Sharif, Managing Partner of Speak Up Malaysia, and we are discussing whether we hold male and female leaders to different standards and expectations. And this is coming off, you know, recent discussion over videos showing Finland's Prime Minister Sanna Marin simply dancing at a private event. We'll be right back after a quick break on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. On the show with me today is Amelia Sharif, Managing Partner of Speak Up Malaysia, and we are discussing the recent reports over videos, a couple of videos showing Finland's Prime Minister Sanna Marin dancing at private events. She wasn't doing anything illegal that was shown in the video. She has, you know, defended her actions, saying that this was a private event. She has also taken a drug test voluntarily to allay any concerns and criticisms that people have leveled at her. So we are using this instance to discuss whether we hold female and male leaders to different standards and expectations. Now, we've sort of spoken about this case quite a bit, Amelia, and it has also broadened that discussion to look at the leadership qualities that we place on men and women, right? So would you say that we do hold, very different standards for male and female politicians and public roles, especially here in Malaysia as well?
Absolutely. I don't think there's any other acceptable answer to that question. And if you look at past scandals of male politicians from around the world versus this, the difference in severity is just so appalling, you know. I mean, we've seen similar accusations of, that you're not supposed to party being thrown at men before, but it was only because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Nobody was criticizing the UK prime minister, for example, for, you know, drinking. It was because, oh, it was COVID. There should be restrictions and stuff like that, right? So I do think that there is indeed a double standard, and the way these double standards are being put onto this, women is actually used against them to character assassinate them, to prove that they're incompetent, to prove that they're not good enough to be in the position of power that they are.
And looking at, I guess, the Malaysian leadership, political landscape as well, how would you describe how we, as well as their own peers, how you know, we treat female MPs, ministers, or any woman who takes on a public leadership role here in the country?
I think women politicians are respected less than male politicians, and they are respected less than by their peers as well. I don't have, you know, specific data to support this, but you can sort of like observe behavior of politicians in parliament. And I love to remind people that if you remember during the debate for the anti-sexual harassment bill in parliament, you could see that when a female MP was speaking, and the kind of the way that, you know, other MPs would sort of like jumped, cut them off, interrupt them and things like that. And if you also remember, there was a very specific part in that debate when a particular MP said that, you know, yeah, but of course you should expect people to use this kind of harsh words. Of course you should expect people to sexually harass you when you're behaving in such an unacceptable way, you know? So you could use that. And then someone else responded, hey, are you like giving excuse to sexual harassment? And this MP said, here in our country, that using bad words is worse than sexual harassment. So as you can see that, I think even in our own parliament, you can see that male politicians get away with really, really, really unacceptable behavior. And even when they curse in the House or allegedly cursed in the House, you see no actions being taken against them. You see female MP pleaded with the Speaker of the House and the Deputy Speaker of the House over and over and over again to please take actions against men who commit this kind of behavior, because it creates such an unsafe environment for our politicians in Parliament. And you can see until today, no concrete actions have, you know, have been taken. So yes, I would definitely say in Malaysia, even more so, female politicians not just have to, you know, enter into this this, you know, industry arena where they are seen as less capable, even though they are exceptionally capable, but also they have to fight and exist in a culture and in an environment that absolutely does not respect them and perpetuate a culture of violence against women and misogyny as well. So yes, I would think definitely Malaysia has a long way to go on that.
And you touched on this a bit earlier as well, Amelia, talking about how we take on these behaviours that are put on us as a child, right? Especially as young girls, you know, you're expected to behave in a certain way and you carry that with you into your professional life. And do you find that women leaders are also harder on themselves?
I mean, it's very hard to make a sweeping statement on this, but I do think because women usually are held to higher standards and they are usually subject to extreme scrutiny and are usually and usually there is also a higher burden placed onto them to prove themselves, then I think, of course, naturally, it would mean that women would have to do so much more to just prove to the world that they are capable, that, you know, that, you know, that they can do their job. But I don't think, given the option, that women would take it out ourselves, you know, even for like the average Malaysian, like nobody would just want to be like, hey, I want to put 200% in this job when my male counterparts can just put 80% and be considered good at it. So I don't think it is a role that we take up because we really want to. I think it is a role that maybe we take up because we have to, because otherwise there's just no way for us to break the glass ceiling or even like climb up the ladder and things like that.
What do you think female leaders bring to the table? And that's something that's often discussed, right?
Well, they bring to the table anything that male, you know, leaders bring to the table. But even more than that, they bring a set of values, mentality, intelligence, lived experiences that are only, you know, that have been lacking so far in the way that policies and laws have been, you know, put into place in any countries in the world. Because, if historically speaking, you know, laws and policies have always been created by men in a room full of men without taking into account the realities of women or other genders in that particular nation. So in this day and age, the reason why having women or a diversity of leaders of various gender and background, why that is important is because we need to move towards, you know, creating policies, laws, mechanisms, structures that take into account the lived realities of the many, many, many different you know, issues, problems, contributions that women can make, had, you know, policies been targeted towards empowering them or even giving them the more opportunities or just recognizing that they have the ability to do that. So I do think without this diversity in leadership position, you will not be able to do that. You will see the same thing being done over and over again. You will see half the population being left behind. You see half the population being ignored. You will see women's issue being considered as women's issues rather than national issues. So I think to move away from this problematic way in which a country is governed, in which laws are enacted, you have to make sure that there's diverse representation of leadership at any table.
It's, I think, as a lot of activists and civil societies often say, it's not just about having women at the table, it's having their experiences, what they bring to the table, because we've not had those sort of inputs in policy making, right? How do we make that distinction then, you know, when someone, you know, when we do have more female leaders at the table, right? How do we recognize that someone is being criticized because of their capabilities or simply because of their gender?
Yeah, I think the first question that I usually ask myself is, had she been a man, would the same criticism be thrown at her and would it stick? So, which is why I was Googling, you know, politicians around the world scandals, and I was just reading through scandals after scandals of politicians, and that's why I made the comment earlier, this is not even a scandal, this is nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, so then you can see the double standards. But I do think, I mean, Sue, and if I can just make a small commentary on pop culture a little bit, because I also think that we live as a society when our understanding and the way pop culture reference our relationship with alcohol is also just slightly, I don't want to say it's problematic, but it created or it led us to where we are today. So if you look at movies, TV series, or songs that features men and alcohol on the screen, it is usually a very legendary man who you know, who's powerful, who's very cool. Mm-hmm. Think Mad Men or think House of Cards, and think of all the scenes where you see men drinking and how they are seen as powerful. And then shift your mindset to think of scenes from movies, TV series, where women and alcohol are put in, you know, on screen, and you can see more often than not, these are like a negative relationship. So they're seen as more weak. They're taken advantage of. You know, it leads to scenes of sexual violence, of violence against women, domestic violence, and things like that. So we also live in an environment where when women are associated with alcohol, people just assume like, oh, you know, this is not good, you know, and all of that. I mean, rightly so, because there are a lot of violence perpetuated in this kind of environment. But unfortunately, it also means that people will always think that, you know, women shouldn't party, shouldn't drink, shouldn't do all of these things, instead of addressing the violence that's happening in those kind of environment. So I think that created also this mindset where we think that women drinking, women partying, women dancing, having fun is just so unacceptable. And it goes back to my earlier comment. We as a society think that women only deserve respect if they behave a certain way, if they dress a certain way, and if you do not succumb to those standards, then you do not deserve respect, and therefore you are fair game for me to scrutinize every aspect of your life. And I think that's where really the injustice lies in this particular instance.
So how do we reframe our conversations about leaders, right? Especially when we're talking about, you know, especially if we want to be more mindful about how we're scrutinizing our leaders, you know, are there harmful labels to avoid, things like that?
I think this is a hard area to sort of like regulate, because again, you could see scenarios when men are put in the same position, and it could potentially create, you know, a situation that is unsavory and things like that. But again, for me, when you are looking at this kind of scrutiny, so first of all, I think people should be allowed to scrutinize. So I don't think we should focus too much on stopping people from scrutinizing public figures. Mm-hmm. But it's also about, but it's more about educating the public how do you scrutinize your leaders in a way that will create more benefits in the interest of the country, in the interest of the people, right? Because even when, like, for example, even in Malaysia, you would see blind support being given to politicians, even though their behavior is clearly not in public interest. Mm-hmm. And the opposite is also true. You could see people just simply scrutinizing any politician, even when they're doing a great thing, right? So it is not about limiting public scrutiny, but it is about ensuring that public scrutiny is done in a way that is in the best interest of the rakyat or in the best interest of the people, rather than pure blind support and allegiance to a particular political leader or a particular political party or a political coalition. I think that's where we need to be moving towards. You know, as a Malaysian, you are free to scrutinize any leader from any, you know, political divide whatsoever. Just make sure that you're doing that for the right reasons and because you're actually worried about how will this impact you, impact your lives, you know, and whether this will translate into something that is more systematic and problematic in the future. Beyond that, I'm not sure if you should be wasting your energy into debating whether or not a woman should be dancing and having fun with her friend, because how does that impact you? You know, it doesn't. So you need to learn how to be smarter with your scrutiny, I think, in this particular instance.
A lot of times when the scrutiny is, the complaints are sort of misogynistic in nature, it feels very instant response, right? How often do you think that people are actually conscious that they're making a sexist remark, to put simply?
I think it's really hard to be conscious about it sometimes because we are born and raised into the kind of families that we are born into, right? Mm. Sometimes you can't help because you are raised being indoctrinated by certain values and things like that, which is why personally, I'm usually a lot more forgiving when people say something and then you point it out, hey, actually that's kind of sexist, and they go like, whoops, wait, sorry, thanks for pointing that out. Mm. I didn't realize that, right? And I must say, even sometimes I laugh at jokes that later on I was like, shouldn't have laughed at that. Or maybe sometimes you make a comment and then you go back, you're like, I shouldn't have said that, right? I think it's hard to be conscious because you don't know what you don't know. But, you know, life is a journey of continuously improving yourself. And when people give you this kind of feedback, you know, take it and try to see how you can do better next time. So it's okay to make mistakes, but just don't make these mistakes over and over again. And when being pointed out, don't be defensive, and just, you know, operate in the world like to cause as little harm onto another person as possible. I think that would be like my advice, because it's really hard to tell someone, oh, don't be sexist, because sometimes they may not realize it or don't see this kind of things. So do interact with this kind of, you know, when you see this kind of things pointed out, and hopefully it can moderate their behavior, it can moderate their opinions. Because when I was younger, I used to believe in all sorts of crazy things too. And thankfully, as you grow up and as you mix with people, as you read up and as you learn, you know, you improve on this, on these things, right? So I believe that it can happen. It's not impossible, but it starts with having an honest and respectful conversation with each other.
Mm, definitely. And I think as we begin to see more diverse public leadership as well, that's definitely a journey that lessons to learn along the way, right? In what you say, you know, we scrutinize, but we shouldn't be afraid to scrutinize our own scrutiny as well. And on that note, thank you so much for joining me today, Amelia.
Thank you for having me.
I've been speaking to Amelia Sharif, Managing Partner at Speak Up Malaysia, and we've been discussing whether we hold female and male leaders to different standards and expectations. If you missed any part of today's show or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can download our podcast on bfm.my or on the BFM app. I'm Lim Suan, and this has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.